This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the joys they've experienced in sobriety, the doors that have opened up for them, the things that they're doing that they never thought they would have as a drinker. And today I'm joined by Jo, who's just celebrated turning a year sober. But again, her route to sobriety wasn't a linear one and not a smooth one. Thank you so much for joining me. So shall we start by you telling us a little bit about your sobriety, how long you've been sober? Because I know you've just had a really big celebration.
Okay, yeah. Well, I've just turned 1 year sober because it's not my first time. So this time I've just turned 1 year sober on June the 20th and I am over the moon because everything has changed so much in the last 366 days because it's been a leap year. Thank you very much.
Oh, you had to do an extra day to get your year.
Yes.
Oh no.
I think I would cope, but I got through, so that was good. But yes, it's not the first time I've actually done the sobriety thing.
So when was your first time sober and what was that like?
My first time sober was about 2017. I did completely stop drinking and I managed to get a year and 3 months under my belt. But the last time I stopped drinking, there wasn't the community out there like there is today. There was no sober Instagram. There was no sober podcasts. I don't think there was many books, but I can't say, to be fair, I looked. Apart from Alan Carr's Easy Way to Control Alcohol, I did read that one. And it wasn't just that I didn't do any work on myself. I didn't dig deep to find out why I drank, how I drank, and, you know, what triggered me. And I didn't do any work. Basically, I put down the drink and I lost the weight and I felt amazing because I wasn't fat anymore and I was happy and I was like, oh my God, obviously I don't have a problem, because people who have a problem cannot go 15 months without a drink. So now I'm looking fabulous. I want to take myself out of the town. Genius. I'm sure I can have a drink now and again, I convinced myself, you know, just when I go out with my friends. So once that decision was made, I booked a night out with my friend and I was quite good for a few months. I managed to keep it just on a night out or maybe the odd one in the week, but really, really not bad. And then in December, my mum got diagnosed with terminal pancreatic cancer, which was a bit of a shock because she was a healthy, she didn't drink, she didn't smoke. You know, we thought we'd be, you know, polishing the stairs to try and get rid of her in her 90s, but no, she was in her 70s, 72. Anyway, that was enough of either a reason or an excuse or a bit of both, if you like, to let that spiral back to where it was previously. To be fair, it was worse than it was. It was gradual, but it was not as gradual as the first time. The first time it took from being 14 to being 39 to say, whoa, this was fast. This was really fast. So obviously for a year, she died after 12 months. So for a year, we were watching her fade, which is horrible. And then when I lost her on the 1st of January 2020, 3 months later, the world closed down. So we didn't scatter the ashes. I didn't see a lot of my friends and we were at home all day. So the excuse to drink earlier and earlier and earlier, and everyone's doing it. Everyone's drinking on social media. You know, it's like a big party, and it wasn't a party because I was so depressed, but I did drink more and earlier, and because of the shops and the supermarkets, and because I had a card for the local cash and carry, my husband went and filled the garage for me because he's nice and he loves me, and that's what I asked him to do. So that didn't help because obviously it was just there was no off switch for me, and there was no running out because there was 24, 24, 24, 24, 24 cans of lager in there. It took me 3.5 years from my mum dying for me to actually get to my rock bottom and say, I can't do this anymore. I just can't live like this anymore. And I'm not saying that's the first time I've said that. I mean, I did a lot of work running up to that day. This was June the 20th last year, 2023. But even in the January, I joined a couple of groups on Facebook, and I was just sort of a little stalker from the background, you know, just like, oh, what's occurring? Oh, okay, that's cool. And I'd started taking photographs of myself when I was drunk and looking like a big fat disgusting mess, so that I could have a look in the morning and shock myself. I even did a video recording once, but I didn't listen to it because I was too frightened to, and I deleted it, which I'm kicking myself now. But I do have some photographs that are pretty shocking from the January before the June. So it's all adding stuff to your sort of your toolbox, isn't it, as you go. Even if you don't think you're ever actually going to get that day one that sticks, all these little tiny things all add up, don't they? So on this day, it was 1:30 in the morning on the night before, and I said, I'm not drinking anymore. And I finished my can of lager and I put it down, and I got the box out of the fridge, and there were 9 cans left in the box. And I took them to the bottom of the garden and I put them behind the shed so I couldn't see them from the house. Anyway, the next day I got up thinking, oh God, it's day one. Oh, frightened, really frightened. And knowing that them cans were at the bottom of the garden, but thinking they'll be nice and warm, so that's good. Anyway, so it got to about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which would have been sort of witching hour, you call it, don't you? Or the
Yeah.
wine witch, the beer monster for me. So the beer monster would start, you know, talking to me and saying, oh, it's 3 o'clock, Joe. You can have a drink. You know, we always have a drink at three, you know. And I'm going, no, we're not doing that anymore. Anyway, I tried to distract myself. I put stuff on the telly. And anyway, I don't really know how I did it, but I managed to go to bed that night without going to the bottom of the garden for these cans of Carling. There was something in me that knew if I could get a day one under my belt, then I would be okay. I know it sounds crazy, but I did. And when I woke up on day two, because I hadn't had a day two for 4 years, maybe, day two was huge achievement, and it really gave me a spring in my step. I thought, oh my God, I did it. You know, the cans are still at the bottom of the garden, and I did not go and cave. So day two, obviously a little bit better than day one because I've got day one under my belt, but it was still only day two. You know, I'm still looking at my I Am Sober app, and it's hours, you know, it's 21 day and something hours or whatever. But I'm thinking, yeah, that's good, Joe. That's good. That's good. Keep going. Keep going. You've got this. You've got this. Anyway, then I listened to the Alan Carr, How to Control Your Alcohol book. Now, I had read this in the past years and years ago when I wanted to control my alcohol because I didn't want to stop. Nobody wants to stop
No,
completely.
nobody says they want to stop. I didn't want to stop.
I didn't want to fully stop. So I read Alan Carr's book about controlling your alcohol, air quotes there. I got about, I don't know, maybe 3/4 of the way in, and I thought, oh my gosh, I've been tricked. This is going to make me stop if I'm not careful. So I put it down. Not kidding. That was the first time years ago. So this time I listened to it on audiobook all the way through. And then I listened to it again all the way through. And then I listened to podcasts. I found podcasts. My husband had been listening to them for years about serial killers and all kinds of stuff. And then I found Sober Awkward first, and I listened to that, and it had been stitches, and these two women were just like me, batshit crazy, drank too much, completely get it. And it was so nice to hear people talking about stuff that, yes, oh my God, that is so me. I did that. Oh, that's exactly how I felt. And that makes such a difference, doesn't it? You don't feel
Oh,
alone.
yes. It really does. Because I mean, it's so isolating. Even with friends that drank, I still couldn't talk about it in the same way. It's like, I'm really worried about this. And then you'd have a drink and you think, oh, sod it, I'm not worried anymore. You know,
That's it.
and so the times you would open up when you've had a drink, you don't care anyway at that point. It's the next
No.
morning. And then you can't ring somebody up and say, by the way, I feel really, I feel really crap now.
Oh, want a great night.
Yeah.
Great.
It's interesting, isn't it, really, how you had that really long time of sobriety. And I'm so sorry about your mum.
Oh, thank you.
It's heartbreaking losing somebody. And we're only ever one step away, aren't we? As a drinker, I think it takes an event sometimes for that drinking to become something we think we're in control of or controlling just about to being out of control. And I know that
Absolutely.
my drinking ramped up when my dad died.
It's hard. It's you don't know what to do. I mean, it's your mum. She's always been there, and then she's not, and you're like, what do I do? Anyway, I've lost people before. I mean, I lost my dad in 2012, but we weren't close like me and my mum because my mum was a single mum, so she brought me and my sister up on her own. So our relationship was very different. My dad let me down a lot when I was a kid. You know, he'd say he'd come round and he wouldn't, and I'd be sat out the window. It sounds like a sad film, but it's true. It's true. So my mum was my constant. She was my mum and my dad. Don't get me wrong, she didn't do everything perfectly right. And looking back now, after having kids, I think, oh my days, what were you thinking? But we all do our best at the time with what we've got, don't we?
You do.
And yeah, so I loved her very much. And for us to go to the doctors and find out she had a year, well, 6 months, as I said, to live was just, it completely rocked my world. But I just want to say to anyone out there that is going through something like this, that by drinking, I did not process my grief. I didn't address my grief. So I was stuck. I felt like I was just stuck. I couldn't move forward because I couldn't even scatter the ashes because we weren't allowed to go out. And I don't know, I was stuck, so I just drank through it. If a sad feeling came in, I'd put a sad song on and I would drown my sorrows. But it doesn't drown them, it makes them worse,
Yeah,
doesn't it?
it really does.
It wasn't until I got sober. To be fair, I actually we scattered our ashes on the April the 11th 23 last year, and I think that made a massive difference to my mental health. There was some kind of closure there after that, so that was the April, and in the June I was able to stop drinking. So I don't think that's a coincidence that we finally laid her to rest and kind of drew a line under it a bit. And then when I got sober, I could finally grieve for her. I could sit and I could think about her, and I could cry, and I could say, look, you're sad. You've lost someone that's been in your life for 40 years. You know, it's a long time. And and going through it, feeling the feels, it's not
Yeah.
good, but it is good because it's the only way to feel better and to come through it.
It really is. And it's so important that we do process. And I know that I had similar experiences. My father died 8 years ago, probably 9 years ago now. And yet it was about 4 months into sobriety that it was my birthday. And I had these waves of, oh, I'm so sad he's not here. I'm so sad. And of course, I've always felt that, but it was so real. And I just sat and really felt it. Honor that feeling. In honoring that feeling, you're honoring that person.
And pushing it down, it's only going to come back, but it's going to come back. And how it comes back, how it rears its ugly head as well, you don't know, do you? Will it be drinking? Will it be drugging? Will it be overeating? You don't know. So if you can process it and get it out, obviously, I'll always love my mum and I'll always miss my mum, but I don't have to grieve for her for the rest of my life, and she wouldn't want me to.
So that second time then that you came into sobriety, you got your day one, you got your day two. I think sometimes people imagine that you're going to decide to go sober, you do it, and then to hear that after a year and 3 months, was it, that then you kind of like, well, I've given up for over a year now, therefore it's so important that we don't allow its fading effect bias to kind of kick in and tell us that maybe we can moderate now. Maybe we don't have an unhealthy relationship with alcohol.
And it does tell you that, doesn't it? It lies. It,
Yeah.
oh, such a lie. And when you look back, you picture yourself in the beer garden with your friends on a sunny day. You're looking fabulous, Oh, it's wonderful. And the truth is, that's not the truth. That is not the truth. The truth is, sat on your sofa, watching Netflix, drinking, not processing your day, not talking to your partner, really, just watching crap on the telly and numbing yourself till it's bedtime.
And forgetting the crap on the telly as well.
Oh my God, the stuff I've had to rewatch.
Oh, I've got whole lists of things that we could rewatch.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? Because you're not really there, are you? You're there, but you're not really there.
And that's scary. That's a scary thing. So
Very.
well done. So you celebrated your year. No chance of fading effect bias.
Absolutely not. 100% not. No. Never. I would never go back. Why would I go back? There's nothing that it gives me. It honestly, looking back, it gave me a 20-minute buzz, and then the rest of the night I was chasing that buzz, and I never got it back. So for a 20-minute buzz, it was costing me more than a tenner a day, every day. It was making me fat. It was giving me pains in my back. It was affecting my sleep, my relationships, my nail growth. That's something I need to say about. It was affecting everything in my life. And I didn't even realize the things it was affecting until I stopped making it affect them. Does that make sense?
Tell me about the pain in your back, because I had aching in my back. What was yours?
Well, I'd got a job working at a shoe shop, and it was quite strenuous moving all the boxes around and things. And I was used to working from home, and it wasn't strenuous what I did from home. So I put it down to that at first. I thought, it's a lot more of a physical job. But this pain in my back, it would be all the time. And it was kind of like a period pain, but in your back, it was sort of like a tightening. It was just, I don't, it was, I called it tummy ache at the back
So
because
was
I
it
couldn't
like the
just,
kidney area? Are we talking like mid? Because you're pointing to
literally
mid back.
behind your stomach, yeah.
Not hip, but mid back.
Yeah, sort of where your dimples are if you have them.
Yeah.
I was concerned because I thought, you've pushed it so long and you've got away with it. This is a bit concerning. So I made an appointment to go to the doctor's. And I told her how much I was drinking, and she booked a blood test to check my liver function. And she said, she rang me, she said it came back, I can't remember exactly what she said, but it came back a little bit out of line or out of the range. So she wanted me to have a scan. So obviously that made me worry a bit. And obviously all my family thought that would be enough for me to go, oh my gosh, I'm never drinking again. No, don't be silly. I was addicted to it, whether I was physically addicted or mentally addicted or emotionally addicted, or I don't know.
But it is an addictive substance. So, like to actually admit to yourself, I know when I talk to people and I'd explain that, cut yourself some slack. It's an addictive substance. And in some way, shape, or form, you are addicted to it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I did put a post on Facebook actually on my year sobriety, on my normal Facebook for everyone to see.
How did that feel?
I was a bit scared at first. I was like, do I do it? Because there's so much stigma. And I said that I am not ashamed that I got addicted to an addictive substance. I'm not in the minority now. Well, no, I am in the minority still, sadly. But it's moving, isn't it, Louisa?
I think it is. I think the trend is changing. Let's talk about your first thing that you find in sobriety that has changed for you for the better.
Okay. Well, there's three things. They're not in any order, these, because they're all as brilliant as each other. Okay. So the first one I'd say is my relationships with my husband, my children, and more importantly, myself, because I didn't have a relationship with myself. I didn't know myself at all. I think when you start drinking as young as I did, I started drinking at 14. That's the age when you're literally growing and learning who you are, what you like, what you want, what you don't want. And to blare all that out from such a young age, I didn't know that I'd stunted my growth, but I did. I stunted my mental growth, my emotional growth. So when I got sober, it was quite weird because I didn't know what I enjoyed. I didn't have any hobbies. My hobby was drinking. So people, if I applied for a job and it said interests, I'd be like, oh God.
What can I make up?
I can't put drinking and Netflix because that sounds. So, you know, you just put something down. I don't know what I put down. Make some up because I didn't have any hobbies. There's nothing that I enjoyed apart from drinking, going out drinking with my friends, staying in drinking, beer garden drinking, day drinking, night drinking, just drinking because it was what I'd always done. It was ingrained into me that that's what you do. You go out with your friends, you drink. If you go out for a meal, you have a meal, and then you drink. And it's just our age group, I think, Louisa.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, we grew up with it, didn't we? It was a hobby. It was a hobby for us. You know, it was a pastime because that's what a hobby really is, isn't it? It's to pass the time. It's a pastime.
Yes. And it's a waste of time.
So what do you do now then to fill your time? So you must have had this void open up.
Time is crazy. Well, I've given up. Well, I'm not giving up telly completely. Me and Andy watch a couple of box sets, are watching a couple of programmes at the same time, and we watch one of each a night if he's not working. But apart from that, I just listen to podcasts all the time while I'm working. Because I work from home, I paint reborn dolls. I don't know if you know what they are, but
I've sort of seen those really lifelike.
Yeah, that look like real babies. I've been painting them since 17 years now, since my nearly 18 year old was a baby. So I've been self-employed doing that, working from home. So I can listen while I'm painting and for hours and hours and hours and hours. And that is what I've done. I mean, it's not the only thing I've done, but I've been listening to podcasts about mental health, positive self-talk, limiting beliefs. Oh my God. Now that's a big one for drinking, you see, because stopping drinking is hard. So when you do it, it tells you that you can do hard things, which is, well, it's huge. It opens your mind and it opens your world. You think, God, if I can do that, what else can I do that I didn't think I could do?
Well, if I can do that, then I can do this. And then you start looking for challenges, don't you?
Yes, I've done a counselling course online in my spare time that I've got now. I'm learning Reiki level one. I've just learned so much about how to speak to myself mentally inside. And I'm kinder to myself now. I was horrible to myself. If I dropped something on the floor, my instant reaction was, oh, you silly cow or whatever. And I didn't even think about it. It was just an instant reaction would be a negative something to myself. I would just say it. So I was listening to a podcast and it taught me to catch myself when I'm talking to myself that way and go, I've done that to myself and I've caught myself when I've been negative and I've turned it and I've made it a positive. And it takes work. My God, it's been a year of working on myself, but I'm finally at a place where I'm starting to like myself and know myself. I've started to draw because I've always liked to draw when I was a kid, but I was no good at it. And my sister would doodle when the kids were little and I'd think, oh God, she can really draw. I've never been able to draw. So I got some paper and I got some pencils and I got some drawing books and I learned how to draw manga people.
That's amazing.
And it's really fun because it really does take you out of your head. It takes you out of everything that's going on in the world and you can just zone out and just draw a picture. It sounds really silly, but I really enjoy it. I've always worried about what people think to my detriment all the time. It's been an issue. Put my makeup, my hair, everything's always got to be on point, whatever, wherever I'm going, even the school run, I'll get up early to get ready to go to set the kids to school. I know, it's ridiculous. I would have less sleep to get ready so I looked what I perceived as acceptable to take my children to school around the corner. Yeah, I know. Now I've been to the shops without my makeup on.
That's a result.
I know. I had sunglasses on, but I had no makeup on.
They just think you're famous at that point. So it's interesting, isn't it? When we care about what other people think, or we sort of project ourselves, we mind read what other people could be thinking of us. We always assume the worst. We never assume the best.
Why is that?
Yeah, so that's something that I, you know, what if? There's a fantastic phrase I heard. It's actually something I'm studying at the moment, and it's called assume positive intent. And it's API, assume positive intent. And there are companies out there with their employees where they get them in their interactions, particularly online, to always assume positive intent behind what people are saying. And isn't that a wonderful way just to approach life?
Oh, absolutely.
The idea of just, do you know what? I'm going to assume you're thinking nice things about me until proven otherwise.
Absolutely, because we don't know and we'll never know because it's none of our business. So if we're going to make up bull, we might as well make it positive.
Good stuff. If we're going to make stuff up that other people are thinking, make it good stuff.
If she's not thinking my hair looks greasy, she's thinking, wow, I love her shoes.
Exactly. And how about the relationships with others then? So that's the relationship with yourself.
Well, my husband and I, that sounds very posh, but my husband and I, we've been together since 2023. So what's that, 21 years? It's a long time.
That's 2003, isn't it?
Oh,
I think
gosh.
It's 2023.
That was last year. No.
Oh, 2000. That's only 12 months, love.
No, but the thing is, it feels like it's only been 12 months, which is quite bizarre. I'll just tell you briefly. My husband had bad depression for quite a few years of our marriage, and he was in a job that he hated and working long shifts, and he would come home and he was miserable and he was grouchy, and he admits that now. It took him to have a bit of a breakdown and lose his job to actually recover, and that was what he needed. That was his breaking point, or his rock bottom, or whatever you want to call it, his enlightenment. And when that happened, he did a lot of work on himself and he got some counselling, and then he got a new job in a place where it's just completely different and he gets on with everyone and he's more talkative. So they're more talkative and he's warmer and they're warmer. And he comes home from work and he's like a different person. You know, I say, oh, I had a chat with so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. So basically, he came out of his depression and found what makes him happy at the same time as I came out of my alcohol and found my happy. So it kind of happened at the same time, despite us being together for 21 years. And in the last 12 months, it were like newlyweds. It's quite weird, actually. The kids are going, oh, get a room. But yeah, it's amazing. And we talk things through now, which is very different. If we're feeling a type of way, we look at that, we look into ourselves and we go, right, I'm feeling mardy today, for example. Mardy, you don't say that everywhere in the country, do you? It's a bit grumpy, grouchy. So if I'm feeling grouchy, I look inside now and go, why am I feeling this way? What made me feel this way? Because when I woke up this morning, I was okay and I was happy. Something has changed my mood. And we both do it. And we look inside and we go, oh, it might be that. And then we say to the other, look, I'm feeling a bit mardy today, but I've realised it's because I've got this coming up next week and I'm a bit nervous about it. And then the other person knows that it's not them.
Yeah.
Which massive difference to, is mardy, what did I do? Oh, I bet he's peed off because I said this. And you're second guessing, making up stories in your head. Don't do it. Ask yourself what's the matter. So before it comes to that, it's just, yeah, it's crazy. It's like we've had some marital counselling, but we haven't. We've sort of done it individually and then come together, and it's really improved our marriage massively, because I didn't honestly know that we were going to survive a few years ago, because I was so low and he was so low, and I thought, is it the right relationship? But oh my God, I'm so glad we hung on, because it is, and it was, and it is.
It's awful, isn't it, that we question then the relationship rather than actually thinking, well, what is it that I'm doing that could be lowering my mood like this? Or is it that I'm in the wrong job? Or is it that I'm drinking too much? Or is it, you know, do I need some support or some counselling? We immediately look for the external problem.
Absolutely.
You know, and sometimes it might be the relationship, but I think there's a lot of times that it's wrongly getting blamed, or people are walking away from things when they haven't truly given things a real go.
Absolutely. And then I think if I'd got sober, and then I think I'd have looked back with regret had we split up, I think I would definitely have looked back and gone, oh God, but it was all the drink and the depression. It wasn't Joe. It wasn't Andy. When we met, we were great, and we are now. It's life getting in the way. It's not us.
Yeah. So what's your second thing?
It would have to be improvements in my mental and physical health, 100%. I've already touched a bit on the mental health side of things. I had a bit of counselling, and like I say, I've been doing a lot of reading books and listening to podcasts and things, and it's all inspired me to look after my mental health, because I did suffer with depression for a long time. Anyway, yeah, I'm just feeling so much brighter. I was just so low. Everything was so dark. Everything, I couldn't see any joy in life. You know, I'd open the curtains and think, oh, another Monday. Yeah, boring. And now I wake up and I go, oh, it's a lovely day. What are we going to do today? What's going to happen today? What can I learn today? What can I achieve today? What's going to just happen today? Because things just happen when you get sober, which is a bit weird. It's a bit magical, really. But yeah, like an email from you saying, would you like to be on my podcast? What?
Yeah, you get a random message from me. Exactly. Saying, right, you celebrated your year. Congratulations. Come on the podcast.
Yes, I know. So things like that. You just don't know what the day is going to bring. And I love that. I find that really exciting. And physically, that pain in my back, what pain in my back? I don't have that back pain anymore. I've lost 5 stone in weight.
5 stone in weight. That is amazing. I bet you feel fantastic.
Oh my God. I feel amazing, because this is where I was before my mum was diagnosed. I was a size 10 when my mum got poorly, and I got up to a size 22. Last June, I was a size 22. That's a big jump. That's in the UK sizes for anyone listening in America. I don't know what that equates to, but it was skinny, then it was fat. So I am now a size 12, and I am happy as a 12. I was too skinny as 10. So anyway, I've lost the weight. I live in a 3-story house, so it's got a lot of stairs. And my boys have the top floor. So they have a bedroom, a bathroom, and a bedroom. That is the top floor. It's their zone. I'd let them get on with it. And when I was fat, when I was size 22, I would walk up them stairs, and I would be absolutely shattered, out of breath, and my legs would hurt when I got to the top floor. Oh, my days. Honestly, it's a house. It's not a mountain. So, yeah, I can run up the stairs. I can run down the stairs. I can walk around the block. I can walk 10,000 steps. I can do anything I want to do now. And mentally, I can do anything I want to do, because I can. Someone will say to you, oh, you can't do that. It's too hard. Or who says I can't do that? Who says I'm too old to do that? I can train to do that. If I want to do that, I can do whatever I want to do, you know? So mental and physical health, huge, huge benefits.
You've mentioned that pain in your back has gone. Did you ever get to the bottom of what that was?
I didn't, but I did actually get a scan on my liver. And they scanned my liver first, and they said that there was some fat there, but they wanted me to go for a proper scan. Now, that's where the sort of look, where she looked, I've never had anything like this before, was sort of at the side of my bra, where my bra is. You know where your bra fastens at the side, sort of under your armpit?
Yeah.
Where she sort of scanned. And she told me that my liver was 60% fatty. But there was no scarring at all. So I have been really blessed there to drink for 30 years and not have anything that can't be reversed, because scarring can't be reversed, but any fat can through not drinking and through eating a better diet and getting some exercise. So she said to me, I want to come back in 3 to 5 years and we're going to do it again. So I've got my letter, I've got the date of that letter, and I know it takes a good year for the appointment to come through. So in 4 years, I'm going to write to them and say, I need to see me liver now, please, because it's going to be so beautiful and so skinny.
I would love to get that done. I would be a bit scared, I think.
I was terrified. I thought, what are they going to say to me after all these years? But to say there was nothing that couldn't be reversed was quite incredible. And the liver is so amazing that it does so many jobs that you don't even realize. And then it's trying to sort out all that booze as well, because it can't process any of the food you eat because it knows that the toxins are more important. So it works on those first. So that's why people who drink too much have got extra weight, because their body isn't processing food properly or getting the nutrients from it properly.
Yeah,
So,
it's so clever, isn't it?
yeah, it's amazing. So now it's doing its other jobs of not having to process all that booze. It thanks me every day.
So, what other health benefits have you noticed?
Well, it's not really a health benefit, but I have noticed my fingernails. Now, it sounds ridiculous, but when I was pregnant with my son, Sam, I had a photograph taken of my big belly baby bump with my hands on my bump because I was so happy to be pregnant. And my nails are insanely long. Now, I put that down to pregnancy hormones. You know, the growth hormone and stuff. You know, they say your hair gets thicker and all that stuff. My nails were incredible when I was pregnant. When I stopped drinking, my nails were incredible. It wasn't the pregnancy hormones, it was the lack of alcohol. That was what it was. They are so strong and long and they don't peel, they don't snap. They're like fake nails, but they're not. They're mine.
It's amazing. The thing that I noticed most of all was my hair, is that I'd never grown my hair longer. I'd always had my hair short because the minute I grew it, it would get static, right? And I used to put it down to, I remember this as a teenager, and I just put that down to the really horrible material of my school jumper, right? That horrible kind of polyester. I was literally just constantly static. So I think that was the jumper because I wasn't drinking. But then as I got older and my clothes quality got better, I still had that problem. But I don't now. And it's actually meant that I've grown my hair long for the first time in my adult life.
Isn't
What
that weird?
a random side effect or random positive benefit.
Yeah, that's crazy. And the dark circles. I mean, I've always had dark circles under my eyes. I still have dark circles under my eyes. I think it's a family thing. But my God, they're not like they were. They were so purple and puffy all the time. And my face was puffy. I looked really fat, like a gerbil. And my face has slimmed down. Yours has, hasn't it, as well? Your face has gone whoosh.
Weird, I didn't even know I had cheekbones.
Did you think you had a fat face? Because I didn't.
I didn't know, I really didn't actually. When I was I kind of thought, I'm not looking as good as I think I could look. And I was kind of trying to ride it out, going, come on, Louisa, this is 40, you've had a baby, come on, get over yourself. This is just what 40 looks like. And yeah, I was completely selling myself short because that's what drinking was doing to me. Not what 40 looks like.
100%. Yeah.
But yeah, I did. So you notice your face change shape.
Oh gosh, yes. If you look at my inst if you check me out on Instagram and look at my pictures, you will see how fat and puffy my face was and how purple my eye bags were. And now how it's I've got a jawline again and a neck and one chin instead of four. It's really nice.
It's a wonderful addition.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Feels so much more confident because I look so much better. Because when I put all that weight on, I think because I'd never been that size. I've always dieted all my life, yo-yo dieted all my life, but I've always been around a 12 to 14. So going past the 16, 18, 20, 22, I was completely out of my comfort zone. And I felt like I was wearing a fat suit a lot of the time. And I felt really trapped inside, like, oh my gosh. And when I started a new job where people didn't know how I've looked for the last 40 years, and they just thought, I had to tell people all the time, I don't usually look like this. I've put a lot of weight on. I'm not usually this fat. And I made excuses for the way I looked because I felt like I had to. It was so uncomfortable. Yeah. Anyway, I had to leave my job to get sober. I'm not saying people should leave their jobs to get sober, but I wasn't happy there. And I knew that if I stayed, I wouldn't. I had to drink when I got back from work. And I was in such a dark place that if I'd stayed, I wouldn't have stopped drinking. So I had to quit my job. Yeah,
that's a very conscious decision that you made. I'm not happy in this job. I can see that I'm not going to be able to achieve sobriety by doing it. I'm going to quit.
Absolutely. And I quit in the April, and I scattered mum's ashes in the April, and I stopped drinking in the June. So it was 100% the right decision.
So how did you approach stopping drinking? Did you have any support, or did you, I know you read and you listened to a lot of different things.
Yeah. I did actually. There's a local alcohol and a substance abuse recovery centre in my town called We Are With You, or With You Now, they've changed it to. And I actually went there a few times over the last 11 years because it's sort of the last 11 years that I was really sort of concerned about how much I was drinking, and I wanted to learn to moderate, obviously back then, because not stop, no. So I went to this place and they were lovely, they're really supportive, but a lot of it was cutting down gradually, because that is the safe way to do it. And that's obviously what they have to tell their clients to do. I struggled with that because if I could reduce, then I could moderate. But I did go to a few groups through that, and that was the first time I realised that it wasn't just me. So that was a massive help.
So what's your third thing?
It sort of goes with number two and number one as well. It's basically looking forward to the future now. Because when I was in my drinking, I didn't look forward to the future. I didn't even want to wake up the next day sometimes. I'd wake up and I'd think, oh God, here we go again. Which is awful now, looking back, because I've got my beautiful boys and I've got my wonderful husband. But I couldn't see any of that because it was all buried in all the trudge and the drink and the depression. I just couldn't see. So now my eyes have been opened and I can see. And I'm so grateful for what I've got. I think gratitude is a massive thing for me. Every night when I go to bed, put my head on the pillow and I say in my head, thank you for, and I say the things that I'm grateful for that day. And I do it every day, and I've done it for 380, whatever we're on, days now. And it makes a massive difference to me, because you don't realise what you've got until you can see. Till your blinkers are taken off, you can't see what you've got. And now I can see what I've got. I'm so grateful. And I can see a future. And every day I get up and I think, oh, what do I want to work towards? You know, and it's not always about the goal either. Because if you're aiming towards a goal, when you get to that goal, then what do? So I want to be constantly growing. And that's when I feel good. When I feel like I'm moving forward, because I've been stagnant for so long, I just want to grow. And I might be 45 and three quarters, but it's not too old. It's not too old to do stuff. It's not too old to learn stuff. And by the time I'm 50, I'm going to be awesome at whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, that you are. I love that. 45 and three quarters. Do you remember Adrian Mole?
Yes. That's the thing. Now I'm sober. I'm literally, the last year, I know what happened. You know, I know what the first 3 months of the year were like, and I know what the next 3 months of the year were like. And I can look back and I can think, oh, I did that. You know, I've grown. I've just growing all the time and changing all the time, which I love. I just love it, and I'm bouncy, and I'm too much. I know I am, and the kids are like, "Oh gosh, she's just I've got too much energy all the time, and I can't sit still." But I love it. I
Yeah,
love
it's
it.
embracing that energy though. I'm pretty bouncy.
Honestly, you are such an inspiration for your fitness, because that's something I've not touched upon yet, but it'll come. It'll come. I've said to my husband, I said, the first year is about drinking. If I lose a bit of weight along the way, great. But yeah, I did, because I was drinking a lot of calories. Now the year's done. Not the year's done, but I've got that year under my belt. It is time to start thinking about maybe getting a bit fitter and other aspects to excel in. Because why not?
What you can do. I mean, I had exactly the same conversations with myself. Somebody said to me the other day, they were listening back to an earlier episode of this podcast where I was telling, I think it was probably Running Dry Rich,
Oh,
who
yeah.
I was saying to him, yeah, I'm going to catch me running. And then they were
Yeah,
laughing because they're like, you do run. I'm like, yeah, but only recently. And boy, did it take some getting into. But again, mental attitude. I was telling myself I couldn't do it. But I kept saying, if I can go sober, I can run.
exactly. You can do anything. Like the driving lessons thing. I'll just quickly say for anyone whoever's listening, I can't drive. I have had driving lessons when I was younger a couple of times, but I didn't have good instructors and I was just so incredibly nervous. And I have all these beliefs that some people just aren't born to drive, Joe, and I'm one of those. That's what I used to say
Yeah,
to
that's
people.
not going to help you, is it? I mean, if you're literally sitting there thinking, yeah, I'm just not born to drive.
That's it. That's it. And that's what I've believed for the last however many years. And now I'm thinking, I also believe that I'd always drink. Oh. There, I was wrong. Maybe I can drive. So, I'm speaking to a wonderful hypnotherapist called Louisa Evans about learning to drive.
You are. You are,
I
and
am.
I will support you in that. It's so important the way that we talk to ourselves. It
Absolutely.
really is. And you can, but when you've been telling yourself for years that you can't, it's no wonder you believed yourself.
I know. I
But that it
know.
is that absolute brilliant example of cognitive challenging, of changing your mind about something. When you go sober, it's like, well, I always thought I'd be this person with this drinking identity. Now I've proved I can do that. Anything is possible.
That's it. And that's exciting, isn't it? It's, I mean, I'm 30 years late to the party, but I feel like I'm 14 again and picking my options at school. What do I want to be?
There is no reason ever to stop, is there?
No. Why would I
No reason
stop?
to stop learning, no reason to stop growing.
Absolutely. I love it. Yes, I love all the podcasts about health and about mindset and about all the new nutritional science and everything. It's I just find it all fascinating and I just completely overwhelm my brain daily with it all, but I love it.
There's nothing like a bit of curiosity. Love it. So, what would you say to yourself if you could go back to yourself at the start, just over a year ago? What piece of advice would you give yourself?
Would I say? I would probably say keep going because it does get easier. You won't be thinking about it all the time, like you are now. There will become a time where you don't think about it at all, believe it or not. And honestly, if you can just get to 100 days, you will see everything change. Because the people that just have a week off and go, well, I didn't feel any better, or I wasn't sleeping any better. It's been a bloody week. Come on, you've got to give yourself some time. If you've been drinking for 30 years, a week off, you're not going to feel the benefits. Although, to be fair, I felt better on day three, but I was drinking a lot. I would say you can do this. You can do hard things. And it's not as hard as you think it is. It's how you think about it. Now, the people that count down, the people that stop in January, you're podcast for Dry Jan were amazing, by the way. I actually recommended them to a few of my friends and I said, God, this would have been amazing on day one, two, three. Where was she then?
Great. I was only 6 months sober when you started, so I wasn't. I was writing a book at that point, I think, about early sobriety.
So I would say keep going because it just gets so much better. And 100 days, that I think that was a really good length of time for you to really get stuck into it and to really see some of the benefits. But then you think, oh, well, is that it then? Is 6 months, is that where I peak? You know, because my name on Instagram is Pink Cloud Sober, because they say when you get sober, you become all happy and you see all these pink clouds. But it's like, you know, it's short lived. It's the honeymoon period, you know, all that. Well, I am a year and a week in now and I'm still pink clouding.
Yeah, I remember somebody saying that to me, oh, you're in the pink cloud. And it was really quite dismissive. And I thought, I'm not having that. I'm not having that. It's not about something that passes. As long as you're working on your mood at the same time, this isn't a magic fix-all, but it is. If you're working on your mood, working on making sure that you're engaging in flow activities, engaging in things, ensuring that you're connecting with other people, making sure that you've got those achievements, those accomplishments, that you're connecting to a bigger meaning in life, all those elements that make up kind of well-being experience, and you build a buffer. And if you can build that buffer, then if you do have something impact you, you have got a bit of a gap that will take that impact, because life is going to throw shit at you. It's life.
Yes.
But I am still actually a million times better than I was as a drinker.
Oh gosh, even a bad day, isn't it? Even a bad day when you're sober is nowhere near a good day when you're drinking.
That is such a good comparison.
It's
exactly
true.
It. So somebody listening to this is considering sobriety, maybe at the start. What would you advise they do?
Distract yourself in the early days. That is really important. I did jigsaw puzzles till the early hours of the morning because I hadn't sorted out my sleep yet. So I was still up till 1 a.m, but I wasn't drinking. I was jigsaw puzzling. So distraction is very important. Community is huge. Now, I wasn't on Instagram. Well, I was on Instagram. I had an account, but I didn't really go on because I was more of a Facebook girl. But oh my God, Instagram, the sobriety world on Instagram is huge. And I didn't even know it existed. So I would suggest go on Instagram, open an account with whatever name you like. You don't have to put your real name if you don't want to. You don't have to put a photograph of yourself if you don't want to. And just find sober people and follow them. Just follow them. That's all I did. I just typed in sober and I followed a couple of people and they followed me back. And then I had a friend request or a follow request. And then I've got nearly 700 people on there now, which is just crazy because I thought if I can just get 20 or 30 people that think like me, there's millions of us.
There's loads of people on there, isn't there?
Around to see the people and all the inspirational stories on there. People are jogging and people, but even people, even small things, you know, you don't have to climb a mountain. You don't have to start running marathons. It's, you know, the small things that you didn't see before, because alcohol lowers your happiness throughout the week. It's not just, I found this out recently, which I was, oh my God, that explains a lot. That I was down all the time, more unhappy than the regular person because I drank a lot. And not just when I was drinking, all the time. So now I don't drink. You see things in the world, like you'll see a tree that's a funny shape or something, and you go, oh my God, look at that tree. It's so cool. It's a really weird shape. And you think, I wouldn't have even noticed there was a tree there.
Yeah.
Because you don't look up, do you? You look down and your world's very tiny. But when you stop, it grows and everything becomes so much brighter. It's like it's in HD all of a sudden. So yeah, keep going. It gets better. It gets better. Listen to podcasts. Listen to stories of other women and men that have been where you are. There's so many stories out there. So many podcasts. Yours is amazing. It's so nice to hear other people's stories and how they've come through it and how they're glowing now. And yeah, it really is. It's not boring. Been sober, it's so not boring. And the people that are sober, come on, they've been the biggest party animals. They are awesome people with some awesome stories to share.
Jo, it has been so lovely to have you on.
Thank you so much for asking me. I did think if anyone ever asked me, what would I say? And I thought, oh, well, no one's going to ask me. And then you asked me, and I thought, oh my God, I didn't have an answer.
I did have to
But yeah,
twist your arm a little bit, but
you
you
did
know.
a little bit, but I thought, come on, don't have limiting beliefs. You can do this, Joe. So here I am.
So I hope you enjoyed that episode. The links, as always, are in the show notes. You'll find links to my website where you can find out more about working with me if you'd like support, either on a one-off basis, just having a session every now and again to keep you on track, or you can sign up to one of the packages where I support you for the first month or for the first 3 months. Just head to louisaevans.com. And if I could ask a favour, if you're enjoying the Sober Rebel podcast, I wonder if you could take the time to please leave a review and a star rating on either Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever you listen. It really does help other people find it. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much again for listening, and I'll catch you next time.